This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Yeah, let's go over to another case that is rearing its head this week, finally. Lindsay Clancy, a January night in Duxbury, Massachusetts, Patrick Clancy left home to go pick up takeout and came back to the end of his entire world. His wife, Lindsay, was on the ground beneath a second-story window, and Cora Dawson and a baby, Callan, were in the basement. 3.5 years later, she's finally facing a jury. 18 of them, more than they seated for Karen Reed, on 3 counts of first-degree murder. Her lawyers say 13 prescriptions broke her brain, which they did, and prosecutors say she planned it. Yeah, just on her own. Never mind the 13, you know, antipsychotics going in and out of her system every other day. And every message you've seen lands on the same impossible question. Can a mother be sick and guilty at the same time? Your thoughts as we break this down in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Robin Drake, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, here to help us discuss. Can she be guilty and sick at the same time, Robin?
That's a great question. This is the most horrendous case to me because there's 3 babies that are dead because of her, and that needs to be accounted for, which she owns. But because, like you said, all these medications, misprescribed, whatever the reason, broke her brain. And she had a psychotic, well, what is being claimed by defense, a psychotic episode, is a one-off, because she does not have a behavior arc or pattern of having done these horrendous things in the past. In the sense of, you know, although she said it, she made threats, she sought help. So I don't know how I'm glad I'm not on that jury.
I want to throw, this is, for whatever reason, in 2026, we still can't wrap our minds in this country around the fact that our minds involve health as well. It's not just our other organs that can get unhealthy. Our brains can get very unhealthy. And that happens to be the originating source for about 90-some% of the problems in our country, unhealthy brains, yet so many places are like, we're not even going to consider your mental health. It's either you're bad or you're good. Your brain has nothing to do with it. Let's just go down a route here, a thought experiment, if you will. Let's say there was something else wrong with Lindsay Clancy, or anybody for that matter, and the doctors prescribed 13 different medications, on and off, on and off, on and off, different dosage, up it, lower, take it off, don't do this one. But you're talking to different doctors. Nobody's communicating about this between them, the doctors, because that's how the system's set up to fail or work. It is what it is. That's how the system works, quote unquote. Doesn't mean it's effective, but that's how it functions, I should say. So let's say you do this and you get on off all these medications, and eventually it totally fucks up your heart in some way, shape, or form. It's just, it's not beating right. It's irregular. It's going off the charts, and it's a very unhealthy state. But you're in that state because you raised your hand and went to doctors and said, there's something wrong with my heart. I need help for this. And they bounce you around to all this. And at the end of the day, you have a heart attack and you're driving your car and it goes off a cliff with your kids in it. And you're in it too. Is that because of you? Or is that because of the 13 different medications that totally fucked up your body and didn't help anything, even though you were trying to get help and ended up killing everyone because one hand couldn't communicate with the other within the medical community? Take the brain out of it. If it was a different organ that killed everybody, would we be having the same conversation?
Yeah, it's a great thought experiment, because the question I ask is, I'm very curious about it, it'll hopefully come out in trial, is, so they're bouncing around medications, and as a psychiatrist, they're trying to figure out what's broken in the brain. They're trying to medicate the brain, and that can be very, very difficult. As we've seen in all these scenarios, I've known people, you've known people, and going on these micromilligrams sometimes of the chemicals needed to bring that brain back into healthy balance is very difficult. I'm curious about what advice they told her, what she could and couldn't do, after they said her brain was or wasn't fixed, because I think there, to me, the culpability is going to lie in the fact of, did they say she shouldn't have contact with her kids because of them being imbalanced, or did they say, no, you're good to go to have contact with everyone? I think that'd be I'm interested in that question as well, because, like, to your point, you know, if, you know, going back to your thought experiment, if the doctor said, no, you're good to go, but then you have a heart attack and kill everyone in your car, what culpability does the doctor have saying you're good to go and you still wind up having a heart attack? These are tough questions.
Well, and I mean, there's a lot of issues in this story where one could go, well, we could have prevented it this way. Yeah, but we didn't. And we have no protocol to do so. And people aren't necessarily thinking automatically worst case scenario when you're dealing with something like this. We talked the other day, should Patrick have gone out to get takeout when he knew that his wife had said that she felt these feelings before about her harming the children? Probably not. But it might have been a good day. And he might have just made a really bad judgment call. And again, when you're in that scenario, when you have a partner that, you know, previous to this had never, you know, made some, you know, comments of that nature. And this is all new territory for yourself as well. You don't know. I mean, you take it seriously, but unfortunately as humans, until we really see the end all consequences, we don't quite sometimes grasp how serious these situations are. So, you know, should he have stayed home? Maybe, you know, I mean, should the system have taken the kids out of the house? I mean, maybe he should have moved them somewhere. But again, you get to like really somewhat unfeasible territory or territory that is just not going to be the common reaction of ordinary human beings to prevent something like this. I get stuck on the medications. I mean, this is someone, and that's what gets me about this damn case. It's not like she was sitting there and they were like trying to convince her to take them. She was raising her hand. I need help. I need something. And whether, you know, I don't know that necessarily the medical community was, you know, intentionally trying to hurt her, but they do when they don't communicate with one another and they don't know who's prescribing what and how it's being communicated, which way and that way. All the more lesson, honestly, for the rest of us of why you have to be your own advocate when you're talking to a doctor and don't rely on the system reading their charts correctly because they don't. But I don't know that there really was a realistic or reasonable, foreseeable prevention method for any of this. More than they were already taking, more than she was already taking on her own behest.
Yeah, you really hit the key word. And everyone's comments, I completely agree. These are questions that need to be asked and addressed. But that one word, reasonable, from what we've seen being presented in the public forum anyway, they were not flippant about what was going on with her.
Not
they weren't
at all.
Dismissive of it. They were doing all they could. They addressed it. She had a level of transparency and no shame with the fact that she needed medication. So, again, one of the comments was she telling her doctors everything? Well, she appeared to be, because she is being very transparent. She's a medical professional herself. She's a nurse, labor and delivery nurse. I mean, this is what they do, you know, because you can only get better and you expect your patients to share everything so you can treat them effectively. So I saw a reasonable effort from what we saw on the outside, but that's what the trial is going to really dig down on, was everyone doing as much as they reasonably could. And was anyone being flippant about the medication? Were they flipping about the expectations of her mental health? I mean, we're just not seeing it on the outside, but that's what these jurors are going to have to wade through because this is horrible. It's a horrible case.
It is. A new development over the weekend, according to the Boston Globe. This is the Globe's reporting, not ours. I was trying to find records on it. I did so much digging and then stopped, but I'm going to try and dig more this weekend. I'm assuming this is probably accurate, but again, Boston Globe reporting this. This straight from her lawyer that they're divorced. This is new. This is a new thing. I'm not surprised. Apparently, they're divorced. He's remarried and has moved to New York, according to the Boston Globe, which apparently got that reporting from her attorney. The narrative thus far in the public has been that, you know, they're still married. He's standing by her side. He's still standing by her side. That's not changed. But the fact that they are divorced, that does seem to be a new piece to the story or understanding of the current situation. How do you think that affects this case, if at all, when the jury looks at it going, oh my gosh, well, he got divorced and he remarried. Does it affect it at all, or does it not? It's fairly realistic to expect your wife is in a mental health facility for the rest of her life. You might end up getting divorced and remarried, not because you don't love her or care about her or want the best for her well-being, but because you'd like to also live the rest of your life as well.
I think it's going to depend on the reason behind it. It's like, what caused the divorce? If that's the case, I'm looking it up right now,
probably this.
So right now I'm seeing they're not divorced. So let's just go down this conjecture. We've seen this before. You know, we have Asa Ellerup. She divorced Rex, but she's standing by his side regardless. So that was a financial aspect of it. We have, what's her face? Ruby Frankie's husband refused to divorce her, yet he probably should have. I think they're divorced now, though.
Yeah.
It really comes down to what's the intent. And it kind of struck me. The first thing that popped in my mind was the Delphi case. And here's why, is because he was always focused on her well-being. You know, Richard Allen's focused on his wife's well-being. And so I'd be curious about what spurred on, if they are divorced, if they are separated. Was it her saying, you need to get away from me, you need to move on, you need to protect yourself? Or was it him saying, I need to distance myself from your nutterness? So I think understanding that is what we need to have, if that is indeed true, that they are divorced or separated. But I'm seeing...
most places, the Globe is the only one that's been reporting that over the weekend. But I mean, it's a reliable newspaper. So
I'm not dismissing it. It's a thought experiment. But I wouldn't. Yeah. As of right now, they would have to explore for me what was the impetus for it. Was it because of the trial, financial? I mean, there's a lot of reasons.
I would guess. I mean, my conjecture. Just moving on with your life. I mean, you can otherwise you're basically taking care of the person in the mental health facility, you really can't do it. They have to do it. And I don't know. I mean, it's not a crazy thought. I mean, I could see, I don't know.
I could see him getting divorced so that whatever penalties that she faces, it doesn't bleed onto him.
That's true. Yeah.
And so I could see it for that reason. But given, again, only from what we see in the public eye and how they stuck together and how they worked together on all this, it's hard to imagine emotionally them separating for an emotional disconnect, because I see them pretty tight.
The public is very shocked by this case. How could a mother think of this? How could a mother think of harming their own children? And I mean, it's really, it's not funny. It's kind of, it's bizarre to me. It shows a level of disconnect from reality that the general public has on this subject, because it's icky and people like to talk about it and makes them feel uncomfortable. But it's such a reality. This is a comment says, I had postpartum with my second and the intrusive thoughts scare me so much. I've never told a soul. This is exactly why moms stay quiet. It is exactly why moms stay quiet, because if you do tell a soul that you're having these intrusive thoughts, the world can come down on you. And you don't get judged because of the condition you're in. You get judged as a human being by so many people because they don't understand mental health. They don't want to understand mental health. They just want to virtue signal that they're smarter and better and stronger than you, because it didn't happen to me. So how could it happen to you? That's why women don't talk about this. And I think it's also why the public has no freaking clue about it, because it's such a scary thing for women to talk about. Because if you say you have those thoughts while going through postpartum, most of the public is stupid enough to go 20 years later, do you still think about killing your kids? No, it's because of the mental health situation they were in at that moment in time. But then again, you're trying to rely on competent people to have the conversation with, which we're rather short of these days. Do you think that's part of why we have such a problem with the public understanding this, because of the fear of talking about what our brains are capable of doing?
Yeah, it's a lack of context from experience that people have on such horrendous things. Also, I do, because we keep hitting a generational thing today on multiple cases, it's also a generational thing too. I'm a Gen Xer. I know you are, Tony. You know, when you come up from a generation of just grin, bear it, and shut up and suck it up, that's what generally happens. I lost a very close. My wife and I both lost a friend from high school from postpartum. She self-eliminated in a very horrendous way because of it. Never in a million years would you ever suspect a very, very beautiful, successful young woman. And it's horrendous.
Yeah.
But the positive, you know, it's funny. We're hitting some really positive notes today with the current generation. Basically, they're colorblind. They're very accepting. And one thing also this current generation is, because my daughter is part of it, my son too, very much into, if you need therapy, she'll be the first one to throw you into it. And there's no shame with it. So this is a generation that, unlike our generation of the shame, the stigma, that doesn't nearly exist. I know it exists in pockets and it's still there, but I think it's being flushed out more and more because people are more open to the fact that, hey, I think everyone understands we're all broken. We're all working on something. There's no shame to be working on something, because the only people in life that you really shouldn't trust are the ones that say they got it all going on right.
One more of this. I saw a comment, justice for those three innocent children. What is justice for those three innocent children? Is it locking up and throwing away the key on the mom who had postpartum psychosis, who begged for help from many different providers, who couldn't get the right hand to understand what the left hand was doing, basically poisoned her brain left and right in all these medications, and then when her brain acted the way it would when you get that big of a mix of antipsychotics and other things in there, that she acted out the way she did while she was begging for help? Is it justice to lock her away for the rest of her life in a prison where she can't be in a mental health facility, which is what she's asking for? She's not asking to go back out on the street and shit out more kids. She's asking to be locked away in a mental health facility because she knows there was something wrong with her and she's so damn traumatized by what happened, she's never going to be whole again. So what exactly is justice for those three kids in this case, the bumper sticker slogan that ignorant people like to throw out there?
I think justice is learning from having the medical facilities, medical professionals learning from this so it doesn't happen again. That's justice.
Yeah.
I mean, and this mom, you know, be the research tool that they can use to figure it out better next time so she can be the reason why it doesn't happen again.
Justice is not pretending this wasn't a mental health crisis. And it's, if you're going with the prosecution, it's pretending this wasn't a mental health crisis. It's pretending she was just this evil, wretched woman who wanted to murder her three kids while her husband picked up Applebee's. Like, no, that doesn't seem like that. That seems like a narrative somebody wants to go on that doesn't think deeply at all. Justice is exactly, I agree 1,000%, Robin. It's looking at this for what it is and having a better understanding of this shit, so more moms don't have to go through it. So more fathers understand what they need to be looking for and how to handle and how to care for the woman that they love if they're in the situation that Patrick was. That seems more like justice than locking her away and throwing away the key.
Well, think about it. Regardless whether she's innocent by reason of insanity, she's spent her life behind bars in an asylum or whatever it is, or she's guilty and should be behind bars and she's still paralyzed from waist down, so there's nothing more you can really do to her, and you can't bring the kids back. So really the only thing that positive that can come from this, positive, I know it's a horrible word to use, but the only justice in this is learn so that we don't repeat our past bad behaviors that caused it in the first place.
Amen. All right. Yes. Now that we solved all the world's problems today. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in, and we'll continue these conversations right there. Those links are in the description. And be sure to press subscribe wherever you're listening or watching. Of course, we do this every single day, 11 a.m. Central on YouTube. Robin's latest book, It's Not All About Me, available wherever you get books and on audiobook. Go get it. Leave a review. Check it out. You'll love it. Until next time, for Robin and Todd and myself, I'm Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.